Hi, everybody. Keith and the Girls. Keith Malley here.
I'm Chemda. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to My Opening Line. We talk to comedians about their first times on stage.
Go to myopeningline.com for details.
And then we question how they ever became the person they are. Like, they go through that and they keep doing it. Don't forget, laughable.com. Download the free app. You subscribe to a podcast like you do normally. And whenever the new podcast comes out, it comes right into your app. But also, with laughable.com, you can subscribe to the person.
So even if let's say a person has a podcast, but is also now guesting on other podcasts, you can follow which shows that they're going to be guesting on. So even if somebody doesn't have a podcast, but you just really like when they guest on shows, you can follow that person. And of course, you can follow our guest today on laughable.com.
Host of the podcast, Never Not Funny, featured on The Tonight Show, Conan, Comedy Central. Ladies and gentlemen, Jimmy Pardo.
Hello.
How you doing, Jimmy?
I'm doing all right. Just trying to get by like anybody else.
How many years have you been doing stand-up?
Standing up comedy? I started, my first open mic was October of 88. My first paid gig was March of 89. I quit my day job in July of 89.
Wow. Yeah. That never happened.
It was way too fast. It was the comedy boom, or at least the end of the comedy boom. And in Chicago, where I started, there were stage time every single night, paid stage time, and they needed comics for these what are now, we know, horrible one-nighters. But at the time, you thought, I'm getting paid to do comedy. So I got, when I should have been open micing, I was emceeing. When I was featuring, I should have been emceeing. And when I started headlining, I may have maybe featured, maybe even still emceeing a little bit, but
even still, that's fast.
It all happened fast. I don't deny that it all happened fast.
What was your first time like?
The very first time was not even at a comedy club. It was my friend Gary Shera, who is a musician, and he went on to some acclaim. He wrote some songs for some famous people in Nashville and also toured with some people as a keyboardist and backup vocalist. But he had a band. I will never remember the name of the band. And he's like, hey, we're doing a gig at, I wish I could remember the name of the gig, in Frankfort, Illinois. We're doing a gig, and do you want to be the comic that opens the show?
Oh, my God.
And I was like, yeah, I'll do that.
And you've never done comedy before?
I never done it.
They just thought you were funny.
They thought I was funny. And there was always chatter that I would do stand-up. There was always chatter that I'd be a comic. It didn't come out of nowhere.
Did you think that would eventually happen and you just, we'll get to it later?
I don't know. I guess I thought I'm going to go to an open mic at some point. Mm. You know, maybe I had done one open mic. I don't remember. I don't think I did, because that doesn't make sense to me in this story.
What kind of music did they play?
Oh, covers, classic rock covers, that sort of thing.
Okay. And did you know that comedians wrote things down, or did you think they were naturally funny?
I knew they wrote things down.
Okay.
So I had a set list. I do remember I wrote my set list out and put it by the monitor.
Band.
Because I was in a band in high school. Yeah. So I thought, well, that's what I'll do. And I'll put it there. And all the people, I worked at the mall at the time, Lincoln Mall, which is now leveled. But they all came. All the people I worked with at the record store and Jeans West and Wild Pear. And they all came to support me.
Now, did that make you more nervous? Or
no, it gave me, of course they're here. This is what I do. I mean, I didn't know anything. I still had the mindset of community theater, and where your friends come to support you. And so, like, of course they're here. Why wouldn't they be here? Little I know, you don't want your friends at your first five times of stand-up ever. You don't want them anywhere near the stage, right?
They're laughing already. I didn't even start.
Right. I remember one of my stupid jokes was, let me see if I can, I won't remember this, but it was, how many people like to play shuffleboard? That was not the first one. How many people like the shuffleboard? So some people, okay. How many people like to bowl?
Yeah. And
what does that tell you?
And that's it.
That was it.
What was it supposed to tell me?
Nothing. What the fuck about you? I don't know. I have no idea. Right?
I've heard worse.
But like Keith said, my friends go crazy.
Yeah.
Like, what did that tell you? Hey, he gets it. Like, they're going crazy. Everybody else is staring at me. Go first for staring. It makes no sense. You just said sentences. Right? What does that tell you? I don't know. What does it tell you? How about you, comedian? You tell me what it tells me. How about you have a punchline for this?
But wait, so did you take the laughter that you got seriously? You were like, yeah, they get it.
Oh, no, I took very, yes, I'm killing.
I'm just going to focus at this table.
It was weird. So they, and they, you know, my friend Gary, you know, first he wanted to build me up. So he said, we have an opening comedian. He's going to be a new cast member on Saturday Night Live. Please welcome Jim Pardo. And I went up and immediately panicked. I'm not going to be on Saturday Night Live, you know, but I get it. Let's lie to the audience. Let's give him a little show. And then I did my act, and then
how did it go overall? Would you say?
I don't think well.
No,
I don't think well. I think my friends were supportive. I think everybody else was confused. And I will say this: everybody was quiet. Like nobody, you know, they should have just gone back to their drinks and chatter, right. But they didn't. They gave me their full attention.
Did you like?
What a great crowd! You were all quiet. Thank you.
There was a winner. They were respectful.
Did you feel at the end like you killed it, or like this is the start of something?
I kind of felt like, boy, I'm glad this is over. And so then I said, so let's bring up the band, you know, whatever they're called, Spectacles, or whatever the hell the name of the band was. And then they said, we're gonna take another break and more of Jim Pardo. Like what more? What the fuck? What? And they're like, oh yeah, we're doing a second set. You'll open the second set too. I'll open the second set too. I also was there like an hour and a half early because I thought of it as community theater. Like, well, that's what you do as the entertainer. You show up early, you put your sport
red
coat up.
Red leather, yellow leather. Red right? leather, yeah, yeah. Yellow leather.
Yeah, kika, kika, ki. And then I remember the second time was exactly what I just described. Nobody listened. Nobody. Like, is this guy? No, we'll keep playing horseshoes out in the beer garden. So the second set was, that night was atrocious.
And what did you think of that? Like,
oh. Well, I remember being embarrassed. I remember after the first set, like, while the band was playing and, you know, you're doing whatever and people are coming up, hey, you're really funny and being proud and going, yeah, of course I'm going to stick around the bar. You know, I'm having a good time. And then when he said more Jim Pardo, I'm like, what the hell? And then went up and did it again. And it felt like, well, it went well the first time.
What did you have an idea as you were coming up to the stage for the second time?
No, I had no more material. I didn't have any material. You heard my material for the first one. I had nothing. Yeah. So I kind of went up and maybe tried to improvise.
Who likes golf?
Who likes golf? And who likes
baseball,
frisbee?
Football.
What does that tell you?
Do people not respect comedy? Do your friends not respect it, thinking, just go out there and do more of your talking? Because everybody can tell a joke. Not everybody can dig a hole. You know, when you see an awards show and they go, and now for best comedy or musical or anything else that we don't really kind of get.
Right.
There it is.
Yeah. It's, I think Gary got it. I think he thought, because he didn't come from comedy, right. I think he thought, well, the band's playing two sets, the comic will do two sets. Right. I think that was the mentality. I think I got $50, like $25 for each set. Like, okay. I think they gave me a little bit of money. But I do remember after the second set, that I said to my friends, we got to get out of here. Because I felt embarrassed. But I videotaped it. And then
you looked at it?
And then, well, not only did I look at it, my girlfriend at the time was not old enough to get in. So she's like, well, let's look at it. This is days later. Let's watch the tape. And just, I'm watching it just like, what the fuck? This is horrible.
She's packing.
She should have been. She was like, yeah, that was great. Like, she's been trying to be supportive. Yeah. And,
that was a fun hobby you did for a day.
Yeah, well, you gave it a try, right? You tried.
What made you continue?
She goes, I didn't even try and give up like you. So that's great.
Right? I stuck around. what made me, I don't know the answer to that. I think it's just the cliched answer of, this is all I can do. You know, it's like, this is what, you know, I had a great job at the time. That was when I still worked at the record store. Then I got a job working for MCA Records. So I got what was the brass ring, the gold ring, I guess it would be, in the record business. It was like, oh, you're working for a label. So I'm working for a label. I'm hanging out with rock stars. You know, I'm hanging out with Elton John, and I'm hanging out with Tom Petty, and like hanging out with them, not just being in the same room. Like, it was whatever kid wants is a job, you know? And
how did you, like, why didn't you pursue music then?
I guess that's the hole was still there, in, you know, like I still had that void of this is the greatest, but it's not fulfilling me. Mm. And you know what does comedy kind of feels that way. So then I went back to the open mics and then really just started taking it seriously. And then my boss gave me an ultimatum because I was not doing my job then. I was not good at my job. And he's like, you got to make a decision. Do you want to continue working for us? you know, making crazy money. It was, you know, it was the late 80s. It was crazy money. And the record business was bigger than ever at that time. And he's like, do you want to continue working here? Do you want to do, continue this comedy? And I said,
Where were you in comedy at the time? Like, were you making?
Well, that was, like I said, my first pay gig was March of 89 and I quit in July of 89. So I kind of was working, kind of a combo of open micing and working and making some money. But in Chicago, you can make 100, at the time, you're making $150 a week to MC. And so you were getting paid $150 to do comedy for the week.
And that was enough?
No, of course not.
Okay.
No, I ended up going bankrupt. But combined with my MCA job, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
But I thought like, okay, well, if I have all my savings from the money from the MCA and blah, blah, blah. So I said, well, I'll tell you tomorrow. And he was like, what? Like even he was like, well, you can't really be taking more than a second to think about this.
Now, right, the way I said, or you can do your comedy, you heard it in quotes.
You heard
I could barely find the word.
Right. And they had all seen me. They had all come to, I worked at a place called the Barn of Barrington. And they came to see me do a show. And I was, that was a four-man show. So I wasn't even the MC. I was the first comic. It was an MC, opener, feature, headliner. And I was the opener. So I had to do like 12 minutes. And man, I chewed it. They all were there.
Oof.
And I chewed it beyond belief. And like to where like on Monday the next day, nobody mentioned they were there.
Ooh.
No eye contact. Like it was horrible. So when I said, I'm going to take a day to think about it. Okay.
Then, he thought he had you because he was at the show.
And by the way, he probably wasn't wrong. I should have stayed there. So then I came in the next day and I sat down at his desk and I said, you know, I gave it a lot of thought and I think I'm gonna quit. I'm gonna give my 2 weeks and do comedy. And he's like, okay, great. Well, good for you. And so then we went into the meeting. The morning
I just want
meeting.
You to watch this video first.
Here's a clip from about you opening up for Spectacles. So. He brought me into the conference room. Not me. We were all going. He said, well, let's go to the meeting. And so went to the conference room and all the, my other, all the other MCA people were in there from our, the Chicago branch. And he said, well, before we get to the, you know, the ones and twos or whatever, you know, Jim just told me that he's going to be leaving us in 2 weeks. He's just given his notice. He's going to pursue stand-up comedy.
Oh, God. He had to say it to everyone.
And it was like Roger Rabbit eyes out of everybody. They're like, what the wee? You know, like, you got to be shitting me. There's no way this asshole's doing that. And it was, the meeting
was. Can you feel it at the time?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. It was.
Did it make you second guess anything?
Of course.
Oh, my God.
And then I had to call all of my accounts.
He's like, what do you guys think? What do you guys?
What? You guys?
He knew not to ask.
But right. I think they also thought like, well, yeah, well, you shouldn't keep doing this because you're not good at this either. So, you know, but here, nobody's going to fire you. You know, you're not going to, you know, you stay here as long as you can, idiot. You have an expense account. You're getting amazing money. You're hanging out with rock stars. You don't pay for any piece of music. Why would you leave this? Which, yes, why would I leave that? But another, only to fill that void. But I had to call my accounts who I had and, you know, record stores across the Midwest. And a few of them had come out to my shows and same deal. I would go, yeah, I'm going to be leaving. I'm going to be pursuing stand-up comedy. Hello? Oh, no, I'm still here, Jim. Like they were like just stunned silent that I would do that. I ended up showing my wife. go ahead. I love that you're laughing this hard.
I'm so sorry.
No, I love it. What are you sorry about? I love it.
That they all hated you.
They did. They didn't hate me. They just they felt sorry for me. Like, oh, this delusional idiot. Except for one woman. One woman, Linda. I don't remember her last name. Linda's husband was in the band The Insiders.
Okay.
They were a popular band in the late 80s. They had some MTV success, but she was, her husband was in the band and she got it. She like, she saw me a lot. She and her husband actually came to see me a bunch and they would see me struggle. But when after that meeting, she said, I'm really proud of you. You know, go for your dreams. You know, don't let anybody tell you not to. And she was probably younger than me even. Like she was just a young.
That's how she could have that attitude.
Yeah, right. But it still
you
was
know
like.
What?
But
fuck it. What's life?
Right. Live in the woods. Who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit?
Anyway, I got to go back to the home. But right. Good for you.
But it helped. You know, even though we're laughing, that woman helped. I've not seen her since. I don't know if her husband's maybe in a new band or whatever, but she got it. You know, like she got it because her husband struggled, and yeah. That's kind of what you have to do. You kind of have to give up a sure thing in order to take the chance, right? And
did you have any moments of like, so after the 2 weeks you quit and you started making money fairly quickly?
I was making money.
But were you, I imagine it wasn't the same amount of money, especially with the expense account and all the things.
No. That I was down to, you know, sometimes $600 a week, but for the most part, $150 a week.
Did you ever think, oh no, like that's not the way to adult. I should have held on to it while I was pursuing it or something.
Of course. Yeah. Yes. But at the same time, I thought like, I'm in my car driving from Chicago to Portsmouth, Ohio. I'm a professional comedian, not knowing I'm just leaving the Chicagoland area to do shitty one-nighters in other areas. Like,
right.
But in my head, I'm making money. I'm not, you know, I'm a professional. I knew I had a goal and I've achieved it. But it's like, no, I should have stayed at MCA for another year or so. Maybe been a little quieter about doing the open mics and comedy. Gotten better locally and then quit.
Kendra, I'm going to tell you something. You're going to think, where's this coming from? I'm just thinking of a friend of mine, and I wish more people said this. I know that's what counts as a good friend, when they let you know, hey, you have bad breath. Hey, you're not brushing correctly.
Oh, that's the worst, though. Like, I feel like you kind of feel it in your mouth, but still.
Well, the truth is, most of us are brushing our teeth wrong, not for long enough, and forget to change our brush on time. That's because most brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks rather than better brushing. But not Quip. So what makes Quip so different?
That I have it.
Well, for starters, Quip, Q-U-I-P, is an electric toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulkier brushes while still packing just the right amount of vibrations to help clean your teeth. Quip's built-in timer helps you clean for the dentist recommended 2 minutes and guiding pulses that remind you when you switch sides. They're absolutely right. I understood you had to sing like happy birthday to your number, and I'm making a mess. I'm spitting all over. How am I going to be singing and brushing my teeth?
I do. I try to, I'm just like, that's got to be a minute. But I got to say, after I started using this toothbrush, I was like, oh man, yeah. I was mistaken about how long 2 minutes are to brush your teeth.
Next, Quip's subscription plans are for your health, not just convenience. Okay. They deliver new brush heads on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5, including free shipping worldwide.
That's actually really the crazy part because, you know I don't switch my toothbrushes until it falls on the ground and I step on it. Uh-huh. And B, I have to go to the store, and then those toothbrush heads cost a lot, never mind that the actual thing costs a lot, so this was a big solution for me.
Quip also comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror and unsticks to use as a cover for hygienic travel whenever you take your teeth, which is most always. And finally, everyone loves Quip. They were on Oprah's O list, named one of Time's best inventions, and is the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association.
You know what that means? That it could be that at some point, Oprah said, you get a Quip. You get a Quip.
Plus, they're backed by a network of over 20,000 dentists and hygienists, and hundreds of thousands of happy brushers use Quip every day. Quip starts at just $25. And if you get, so listen to this, ready?
Okay.
Go to getquip.com/MOL for my opening line. You'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. I'll say that again.
This is insane. That's an electric toothbrush for what? It sounds like $25.
That's your first refill pack free.
Whoa.
Getquip.com/MOL. getquip.com/MOL.
What would you say to someone new who is coming up? Let's say they do have a job. Should you be quiet for a minute? Should you pursue
it? Live in a world now where these kids are putting their stuff on YouTube long before, like I would have been dumb enough to put that on YouTube. Like that first set from the opening for the band. Right. Like it would, like I thought it went well, even though like in future watchings, it's horrible. But I would have been like,
do you still have it?
Oh, no, no, no.
I burned it down in the house.
I might have it on a VHS somewhere.
Ooh.
I did show it to my wife, Danielle, who I've been with now for, it'll be 20 years in May. We've been together.
And that's how you know she loves you.
She watched this thing.
That's like getting remarried.
She said, here's what she said. She watched it and she luckily thinks I'm very funny. Thank God. She's a comedy writer. She works in the business. She did stand up. She did some television. But so she understands comedy, but she looked at it and she said, if I saw this, I would think you have no future in this business. You're horrible. And I wasn't hurt by it because she was right. But I would have put it on YouTube. I would have fallen prey to what's happening now with social media and everything. I think people are too quick to put their stuff. So I would say my advice would be fail and avoid. Don't let people you know, give you false praise on the internet. Don't let your friends go, this guy's the best, you know, which is what all these young comics, their comments are either you suck, and then, well, I don't believe that guy. He's just mean on the internet. He's a troll. Or you're the best. Oh, there's Don. Don gets it. I would say don't put your stuff up on YouTube quickly, and don't just take your time. I mean,
Say it doesn't matter how many times you fall. It's how you get back up. But don't be videotaping the falls and posting them.
That's right. Fail quietly in a vacuum.
If you think about it, and any other profession, you would go maybe to college or to even a 2-year or some kind of like 9-month program, or even when you start a new job, they walk you through something. Right. You don't, you know, get your clients on the first day.
Yeah. Like, so why would you want to document your first day?
Yeah. You don't put a video on your law website. This is me in class.
Right. Right. And that's basically what they're doing. Right. The other thing I would say is just be true to yourself.
Was there a time that you were doing material that you're like,
oh yeah, it was horrible. In fact, I just ran into somebody who was no longer a comedian, but we started together at a place called the Roxy in Chicago. And he was like, you were the funniest open micer. And I don't disagree with that. I was a really funny open micer because I took chances, and it was maybe a little too Richard Lewis-y of talking off the top of my head and talking in circles. But I was really, really funny, and I took risks. And then once I started getting paid, it was like, well, now I must take this seriously. And I started dressing like Paul Reiser and tried to be Jerry Seinfeld, Paul Reiser, and kind of forgot who I was. And then people are like, you're the funniest guy off stage. You got to get back to what you were doing. And I was like, I'm making money. You don't know what you're talking about. And then it just clicked kind of one day where it's like, you know what? Go back to that. And then that's kind of changed everything. Or at least got me to be back to being true to myself.
What was it like being Seinfeld for a minute?
Oh, it was horrible. I mean, I wasn't famous. but I wasn't. I mean, it was horrible. I wasn't funny at all. I mean, just at all. I would just like, you would look at it and go, this guy, the jokes are horrible. They're not.
You'd be like, what's the deal with phones? I don't know. They're phones. You call people.
What do you like? You like phones? You like megaphones? What does that tell you?
Jimmy Pardo, you want to download the podcast Never Not Funny?
Yes, please do.
All right. And follow him online as well. You're only getting the polished stuff, but that's all you want anyway.
If you like this episode or any other episode, please share it of ours and Never Not Funny. Yeah. Go to myopeningline.com.
And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.